Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and as always, I'm joined by my most excellent panel. From the City of Angels, we have reality's version of Perry Mason, Ace Attorney Peter Haven. Peter, good to have you back on the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Simon. That's one of the best intros ever. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back. Happy New Year, everyone.
I work hard on my intros.
I'm eternally grateful. That was fantastic.
How is the legal world treating you?
Oh, boy, we are just turning the wheels of justice out here in Los Angeles. You can just hear them grinding as we perpetually move everyone closer towards more law and order.
Right. and joining us from Youngstown, Ohio, a city that is not just shrinking in population, but also buildings, more on that soon, author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thank you for that rousing introduction. And Peter, how's the drought going out there for you?
How's what now?
The drought, yeah. Does it look like some rain on the horizon?
Oh, man, I tell you, it feels like we haven't had a rainy day here in forever. We're as dry as a bone, as they would say in Australia.
And from the heart of Bridgegate, Adgate, and now Sandy Aidgate, a.k.a. New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon. I'm so excited to talk about so much today. I've got lots of opinions, and we're gonna run with them. So,
I think that that they're probably going to change the license plates, you know, in your neck of the woods from Garden State to Gate State.
Gate State. We got so much to offer.
Right. Okay. Sam, you have a story for us, and I vote we kick off with that.
Oh, you don't want to? I thought we were just going to go to live remote at the Broncos Patriots game, and then later on, the three of us would all talk about the upcoming NFC Championship game.
But no,
you got to pick on me. Simon, where would you like me to start?
Okay, you had a run-in with Youngstown over the coconut grove. They didn't like the place, and they refused to renew the license. Now, we covered this in a previous program, but you also owned, and I note the past tense, a building, I believe it was across the road or at least nearby.
It was directly across the street. It was a beautiful brick single family that I picked up with a couple other parcels 10 years in the late turn of the century last century. We were stumbling some properties, and basically what's nice about this is two of the people who ran the bar for me rented the place for me so they could literally walk to work and keep an eye on the property, and got a good deal on it, you know, and it was income property. So, and they're very touching, you know, it was a well-done piece of property. It was brick, and it was convenient, and I got a good deal on it.
Okay. So what happened?
So that was the reason I bought the property. About 03, 04, those tenants moved out and went on, you know, they graduated from, they're both people going to Youngstown State University, they graduated, and it was very, very difficult finding good tenants. I had the unpleasant experience of renting to a Section 8 family. If any of you know what Section 8 is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that, Bill, you know what Section 8 is?
Is that mentally you know, disabled?
Yeah. Well, no, that they are the people on financial assistance for housing. And
okay.
It started out as a noble cause in the project, so to speak. And then the do-gooders said, well, you know, this isn't a good thing to have all the same people who are financially not doing so well living on top of each other. Let's give them Section 8 vouchers and let them move out into other parts of the city, let them move in their homes, eventually into the suburbs where they are now with the vouchers, and the government guarantees the rent. But based on their income, so let's say you know, my particular tenant family paid the rent was $500 for utilities. Their portion was like $9, and the government got the other balance plus paid for the utilities. And guess what, guys? They never paid their $9 a month in rent. And furthermore, you had to, in order to rent to them, you had to bring the house up to federal code, which could be very expensive. I was lucky. In my case, the building had been well-maintained before I bought it, the house, excuse me, and we just had to do some minor things to it, so it wasn't that bad. However, when they left the house, oy vey, they took everything. They destroyed the place. It was a nightmare. So, and, of course, you can sue them and go all that, but it was an experience I would never do again. I would never rent to Section 8 housing again. I've heard horror stories from other landlords or other property owners. I've also heard nice things, that some people have never had problems. So, again, it's one of those things that all depends on the tenant, the tenants. Anyway, after that, they had destroyed the place so bad when they moved out. Well, they were evicted because they never paid their portion of the rent. Section 8 actually helped me evict them because they couldn't cough up their $9 a month. And they probably spent that much on drugs that they were buying into the place. Anyway, I evicted them. In the process of evicting them, the house became vacant. I had to fix the place up. Painting, cleaning, you know, you name it and whatnot. Well, vandals thought that the vandals got the handles, broke into the place, stole all the copper out of it. Okay? I mean, literally stole all the copper, all the wires, anything that they could, that was valued that they could scrap, they sold it. They stole it. Very, very big problem in young, older cities and whatnot, not just Youngstown. I'm not the first one. I won't be the last one. Anyway, so at that point, I secured it. Now you're talking... I don't have I can't find a good tenant. The place needs a ton of work, and I just secured it. Well, naturally, some people broke in and set some small fires in it to keep warm during the winter months. So then in 05, 06, I really had to secure the place. Now, when it was foundationally, structurally sound, there was no problems with it. Now, with the two little small fires on the inside and all the copper being ripped out, cosmetically, it was a nightmare. The downstairs was okay, but the upstairs and whatnot was in bad shape. I did cannibalize anything I could get my hands on and put it into the coconut grove. For instance, there was a stairway that led to from the second floor to the top floor. I took that out, and we took the rickety stairway of the basement from the coconut, and I swapped them. I took the furnace out of this house that was in great condition, moved it to the coconut grove. So I did cannibalize it. However, it was always secured. It was, no one could get into it after the last time, and that was that. Then I got divorced from my first wife, and she quit claiming the deed to me, and I started having some financial problems. I was getting behind with the mortgage and in the taxes. I went to contact the mortgage holder, and this is right during the height of the mortgage crisis in 08. Tried to list the property. I tried to deed it back to them or have them deed it back to me because that's what the best case for me at that time financially. It took from 2000 and 08, in the fall of 08, to just recently, right before Thanksgiving of last year, 2013, to finally find out who the lien holder was. So I never paid a mortgage. I have never been foreclosed on since 08, okay? I'm a little behind in the property taxes. It's not that much money at all because my goal was to deed it back to the lien holder because times have changed in the inner city. And the lien holders have been taking the property. They've already got their insurance. They've already been paid up by Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. And they would then dismiss the lien from me. They would donate the property to the city, whether it's Youngstown, Cleveland, Gary, Indiana, Detroit. That's becoming a popular thing. That was my intent. I really wanted nothing to do with the property. However, my lien holder decided, no, Sam, we're going to give you the property free and clear. You deal with it. You deal with it. And I said, okay, that was my goal. My intention was to deal with that in November of this last year. And I spoke to the bank's attorney. He said it's going to take about 60 days to get this stuff done with the holidays. Hopefully by January of 2014, I'll have this place all in your name and you deal with it. At which point, my point was either going to fix it up, rent it out, and try to sell it, or if that wasn't going to work, I would then demolish the building and donate the land to the city. But I had to get the bank's lien off the property. Because that was its collateral, and, you know, the house is the collateral. And vice versa, one of us had to make a decision who was going to take responsibility. Well, a couple weeks before Christmas, I decided to drive out by the property to see, does it need any more work? I was going to meet a contractor there. Do we have to secure it for the winter, et cetera, et cetera. And I drove by it, and it was gone. Somebody had stole my house. It was gone. And so I was in shock, and I sent a certified letter to the building and housing and the places, and I did not get an answer until last week, and that's after on Christmas Eve I filed a lawsuit against the city for tearing my house down without due process. And I bring that up, everybody, because in 2011, the city of Youngstown passed an ordinance that said everybody who owns a vacant piece of property must register it under very harsh penalties. If you don't register your property, pay the fee, and you have to, in this registration form, you have to list an e-present email, social security number, home address, cell phone address, work phone number, home phone number, another emergency contact. And you had to have a handyman to take care of the property. I had someone cutting the grass. I had someone shooing off the vapes during the summer. We had somebody who would clean up the gutters if they looked like they were bad. And as a matter of fact, from 2011, when the city started to do this, up until they ripped my property down, I had been fined four times via certified mail, regular mail and personal service at my home in Poland, Ohio, for high grass. Way for the city to make a lot of money. Someone drives by, sees all the vacant property. Oh, the grass is too high. Fine them $100. And no one fights you. You just pay the fee. But they sent paid to notify you. Well, I didn't get such a notification that they were going to rip my property down. And they knew where I lived. I registered the property. I abided by the rules and regulations that I thought. Well, lo and behold, they decided to notify me, they mailed a certified letter to an address I haven't lived. And it came back, and they decided, it's real estate. No court action. They never notified the lien holder. They never notified me, even though they knew I lived. They ignored their own city ordinances and I can read it to you. The city ordinance actually reads, if the person to whom such notice and order is addressed cannot be found within the city after the keyword here, diligent search, then such notice and order shall be sent by certified mail to the last known address of such person. And they post the property, which means they put up a scotch tape and they put a piece of paper on your vacant property that said, we're going to rip your house down. And they consider that good service. But they first have to do a diligent search. And the site that they use to do a diligent search is the auditor's website. The auditor's website is an informational website that itself has a legal disclaimer on telling anybody that you can't use this as a legal document because it's not up to date. You know, owners change before they can get to it. Titles are changed. Buying and selling takes place. So the auditor's website is more of an informational tool. The city of Youngstown used it as the Ten Commandments and said, no, it's not. I've argued in my initial case that the auditor's website is a moot point. It's the city of Youngstown's own ordinances that they passed. They're already on the book. Number one, what I just read to you, and the second book, the vacancy form, which is the city ordinance, which if you do not comply with, they fine you $100 a day and can throw you in jail for 6 months. And I had complied with that. They knew where I lived. For whatever reason, they chose not to notify me by, you know, at my real address. So I never knew they had any intention to take my property down. At all. I've been cutting the grass, I've been paying the fines, I've been keeping the place secured. Well, a reporter from the local paper who actually is going to be in tomorrow's newspaper, and I've been working with for 2 weeks, got a hold of my case after it was in the paper, that after I filed a lawsuit on Christmas Eve, and we've been doing a lot of digging around. Well, the more digging he's done, the more scurrying the cockroaches, also known as our city government, have been doing. And we found out who the contractor who ripped the place down was. I did not know that was. Of course, as Peter taught me, I filed against the city and John Doe's one. John Doe's 1 to John Doe's 15 because I had no idea who else was involved with it. We also found out something very, very interesting, actually the reporter did, that it just wasn't the city of Youngstown that ripped it down, but the Mahoning County Land Bank decided to get its paws and claws into me. And the land bank, which was a new entity, is being set up in cities such as older Midwestern cities, old and eastern coast cities, where there's a lot of vacant properties. These are the ones that are set up to dispose of vacant properties, not rip down houses. That's up to the city. The land bank's job is to, once the property has been vacant, to try to find a someone who will own it and take care of it. You're an adjacent neighbor. Their goal is a noble goal. They want to do something with these vacant lots once they become vacant. Assemble a parcel for a business to come in, maybe new housing. The majority of what they try to do is to give the vacant lot to a neighbor so that neighbor can get it for free, doesn't pay taxes, and maybe put the vegetable garden on it. That's really what they're trying to do when you read what their mission statement is. Well, doing some more research myself online and with some other people, I found out that our Mahoning County land, what happened is, you all might recall, the banks that ripped off all the taxpayers illegally and didn't want to go to jail paid huge fines to the federal government. Is everybody aware of that?
No.
Right. They all paid, all the banks that ripped off, illegally foreclosed on people, instead of going to jail, they sent a check to the federal government. The federal government then dispersed all that money to all 50 states. None of the money went to the people who were screwed out of their homes. It went to the general funds of the state government. The Attorney General of the state of Ohio then took his, $50 million, and divided it amongst the 88 counties in the state and said, okay, you guys, here's money for you. If you don't use it in X amount of time, I'm taking it back. All right? Well, the Mahoning County's pot of gold, they decided they were going to use the money. They made the land bank the clearinghouse, and they were going to be the ones who identified real estate that needed to be ripped down and anywhere in the county, and those political subdivisions would go to present them with the bill, and then they would reimburse them. But they were under heavy-duty time frames to do this. Otherwise, and naturally, it appears from what we found out, or the reporter had found out, and I'm finding out through public records requests and subpoenas, they didn't believe in this Fourth Amendment, due process of law. They just said they were hoping that they could rip down all these properties, lickety-split, because they were afraid that the emergency to them was not notifying the homeowners or the lien holders, but the state attorney general was going to pull the money back if it wasn't used. Also, no one of the thousands of structures they've ripped down, nobody's a flat fund. They just probably are happier. These banks and vacant property owners are probably very happy that some of their property down and didn't send them a bill. So they're kicking their heels, saying this is great. Of course, as a lawyer friend of mine who specializes in title work says, who the hell owns all the title work? You've got vacant land with bad titles. It's not like they came to you and said, okay, go ahead. That's okay.
Right. You need to take a deep breath.
Simon, I say let her keep going. He's just getting started.
Peter, Sam,
now that you've set the stage, now you should tell us the story.
Four guys around a campfire with marshmallows someday.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That would be the best bedtime story ever, the one you just told.
Yeah, put you to sleep.
okay. No, it's a
Peter,
it's
on a more serious note, you know, what do you think of Sam's story so far?
Well, I'm having trouble understanding a couple of things. First of all, did I hear correctly? The entire structure that was built on the property was just taken down and removed and pulled off? Is that what happened?
It was demolished, yes. There's
just demolished.
Now it's a vacant lot.
They just demolished it and hauled it away.
They just demolished it.
Yeah, and now who is title record owner of the piece of land on which that mansion existed?
I am.
Okay, so you have to keep...
My ex-wife quit claimed her interest in the property to me during my divorce.
So you got to keep the property. The property's still yours. And what was the status of the dwelling? Was it in disrepair? You were trying to fix it up, if I understand correctly.
It was vacant, and my intent was starting this spring to fix it up. And well, again, I was just got finished negotiating with the lien holder to deed the property to me free and clear. So now I was going to go get a loan and fix the property. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, what the lien holder was the bank that had the lien on the dwelling that existed.
That's correct.
And now, is that lien now been satisfied, or does that lien still exist?
That lien, believe it or not, still exists. The lien holder lien holder's attorney told me they're not even going to get involved in the lawsuit. They don't want to get involved in the lawsuit. That if I take title, whichever takes title to the property, they will then not fight a quiet title case in the county court. Is that the right word I'm using, Pete?
Yeah, that's right. Quiet title is a remedy that allows people to go to court and clear up any conflicting claims. You know, if many people claim that they have title to a property, it's basically like everyone is screaming and yelling, it's my property, and the court says, well, we're going to quiet title. We're gonna decide who owns what.
Right. So they said that they will not. They don't want anything to do with it. They won't even show up for the court date.
Now, you're
whether
suing
–
it was the city that tore it down. You're suing the city over this. Is that right?
I'm suing the city, and as of Tuesday, because Monday's a holiday, I will amend the complaint to include the demolition company and the Mahoning County Land Bank.
So you've got two lawsuits now against the government there in Ohio, right?
Yeah, I wear a bulletproof vest when I walk around the city of Youngstown.
You know what I'm really hearing is, Sam, I really need to convert you to a client. You're the kind of guy that lawyers love. You're hiring lawyers left and right.
I wish I could afford you.
I will work something out on those Ohio price indices. I'm sure we could work something out. Now, here's the thing I don't understand. I guess the reason the city tore it down was an issue of delinquent property taxes. Is that right?
No, they're not allowed to. They have to foreclose on you to do that.
But what was the city's stated reason for tearing it down?
We don't know.
Interesting. Well, you know, in California,
no, I understand. You know, I understand they have torn down other houses that were in deemed emergency, you know, places that caught on fire and about to collapse. The fire marshal would come in and say, "This is a public safety nuisance and needs to be abated." They immediately, and he goes, gets an administrative order. They can tear it down. I understand that. You know, as a matter of fact, the city.
So we really don't know why the city tore it down. You have your theories, but we don't. The city hasn't expressly said why it took it down.
No.
Well, you know, in California, if somebody comes into a piece of vacant property and tears it down, there are many people here who believe they've done them a great service because now they can build on the property, create a fabulous home, and sell it for twice what it cost them to build it. And I don't know if that's something you're thinking of, if you're thinking of getting into the developer business, but
the reporter who's been doing a story has dug up two points of view from the two defendants. The new mayor himself, instead of just focusing on due process, said that his thing was vacant property owners need to take care of their property more and visit it more. My line is, it doesn't say that in your stupid ordinance. It doesn't say I'm supposed to visit your property. And what did you post the property? I mean, they said, well, we notified them. We posted. Well, why don't you notify them with smoke signals, for crying out loud? You know? I also said,
well,
to me,
it all comes down to what are your monetary damages from this? And it sounds like they took away from you a dwelling that had some value to it, and apparently there's a lien amount that is still owed on the home, and I guess you're going to continue to pay that off?
Well, no. What I'm going to do is the lien holder, obviously to me, without only knowing very little about the banking industry, this bank and the banking industry, this lien holder's already written off the note. They got their money from, they got reimbursed from Fannie and Freddie. They want out of it. They don't care. They're willing to deed it to me and forgive the debt and take it off my credit. That's been there
so
in
I,
the life.
I think that's great. I would jump on that deal if I were you.
Of course I am.
Yeah.
But I first want to sue the city for demolishing the property without due process of law. I mean,
yeah, that's always
a
shame. Whenever they do anything without due process, it's always a real bummer. Now, but your actual monetary damages right now, do you have out-of-pocket expenses or losses that you've incurred as a result of this?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
right now the lien itself is something that has to be satisfied. But they don't.
I thought the bank was going to write that off.
Well, they are, but I'm not telling the city that.
Oh, well, that's good. We won't say anything on this radio show.
Okay.
This is the point at which I advise clients that anything they say to anyone can constitute evidence, and I'm not sure if the city will have access to public information such as this Blog Talk Radio, but if they do, you know, another thing I tell people is, and this is a good thing for people to know, one of the primary means of surveillance that is now being used by people in the legal profession is, guess what? One of the primary means of surveillance, guess what?
Internet.
Facebook. If you want to conduct surveillance on somebody, just to become their friend on Facebook, and you will find out everything that that person is doing 24/7, 365, if they're the kind of people who like to chat on Facebook.
If I really wanted to have no friends on Facebook, I would talk to them about my house problems. And no one would look at it.
I wish you the best of luck with all your lawsuits, Sam. The thing that's great about it is you are Sam Moffey. You are the gadfly of the great state of Ohio. You are keeping them honest. You are keeping them on the tried and true path, and you're a true Youngstown boy, and I wish you all the best of luck.
Well, Peter, thank you. I do believe that, you know, I'm a big believer in the due process of law. Now, here's what really pisses me off, guys. If the land bank in the city wanted to put my property down, and they were in my and other vacant properties, and they're in a rush to get this down, they already know where I live because I have registered the property. I have followed the law. Come to me and say, Sam, we can rip your property down. And all you have to do is sign over to the deed. We'll deal with that. We'll take care of the delinquent taxes. We're going to knock it down for you. We'll deal with the lien holder because they have to be in that position to do that in today's world. We have to sign off all your rights. Hold us harmless. I would have jumped on that in a moment. You know what I mean, Peter?
Yeah, absolutely.
If they would have notified me, if that was their goal, to get vacant properties down, could they can't charge me for the demo because the federal government paid for it through this grant from the banks. So they had an intent to knock down properties. We don't know how they got to this list, how you made the list, because as a good friend of mine just did with a video camera, he just went around in a 3-mile radius of my house and has taken video cameras of structures that are in horrible, horrendous condition. Mine was not. Mine was not that bad. I could have fixed it up for a couple thousand on the inside and made it a viable rental piece of property if I chose to do so. But if my, you know, just because it's vacant doesn't mean I should be treated like a criminal. Just because it's
well,
vacant,
I tend to agree with you. But when I hear people engaging in this type of conduct, whether it be businesses doing it to private citizens or smaller businesses or government doing it, it sounds to me like someone is trying to promote some sort of transaction. In other words, if they can knock down all the dwellings on X amount of properties, they can then sell those properties or use those properties for another purpose. And it sounds to me like you know, the city may make an offer to you to purchase the property, or somebody may make an offer to you to purchase the property.
Well, why go through this illegal shenanigan? Just come directly to the point.
Well, there's two possible interpretations. One interpretation, there's actually three interpretations. One possible interpretation is that the city did something by the book, and we just don't know about it. They have some sort of power or privilege or statute or ordinance that authorized them to do what they did, and they did it properly. Now, that seems not to be the case here, but that's always a possibility. You can bet that the city will respond to your lawsuit, and they'll claim they did something by the book. The other possibility is that somebody made a mistake. You know, one of my favorite lines from Starship Troopers, the movie, is, oh, my God, somebody made a mistake. Somebody made a big goddamn mistake. Well, maybe somebody here made a mistake. I just don't know. The third possibility is that somebody in the city made these decisions. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they did it anyway because the cost-benefit analysis of it was so slight that they would incur whatever liability there was to incur by knocking down this uninhabited dwelling and deal with the consequences later for whatever reason that they had. Now, I suppose you have a fourth theory, which is that somehow the city has targeted you and simply wants to mess with you personally. And that may be a fourth theory.
I used to think that, of course, there's one person whose name keeps coming up in my problem with the Coconut Grove, and he happens to be on the board of directors and second in command of the land bank. Coincidence? I don't know. Coincidence? Yes. At a minimum, it's a coincidence. Worst case scenario, it's a coincidence. Best case scenario, this guy was out to screw me, but that's not in my lawsuit. My lawsuit's all about due process of law.
Let me ask you something. What do you think? What's your personal opinion as to why this happened?
My personal opinion of why this happened is that the do-gooders who are now in charge of city government and have been over the last 10 years, all the way from the federal to the state to the local, it's a disease in our government where they have these noble cause to rid an inner city of blight. That is a noble cause. I think it's a great idea. They want to get rid of these noble cars, rid of these blighted real estate buildings, you name it, and structure. That's the goal, okay? But they don't believe in due process of law. They believe in doing it through the power of government, and they don't believe in just compensation. They think the government is right or wrong. Their government is right because the ends justify the means.
I want to jump in here. Poor Bill hasn't had an opportunity to say anything. Oh. Bill, what do you think about this story?
You know, again, I think you've pretty much covered everything. It's, you know, the city wants the property for some reason, and they're just picking on, you know, poor Sam because he's such a defenseless sort of person. You know, I've picked that up from just listening to him on our radio show on a weekly basis. That he's a victim. But I really don't have much to add to it. I just think, you know, it's just crazy how they target people for these kind of behavior. And, you know, I guess Sam inadvertently has really pissed somebody off.
Well, no, you know what I will tell you, though, guys, and you know, my other theory, that it's kind of a bizarre theory, but think of the industry that they have created by ripping down vacant structures. Do you guys follow where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Okay, forget about due process of law. They don't give a shit about the rights of the lien holders. I mean, Peter, I'm amazed no title search was by the city or the land bank. They didn't do it. They didn't even care about the lien.
Well,
you
assume they didn't do a title search.
No, I've been told that already. They told me reported that.
Okay.
Again, I'll find out when my subpoenas all hit next week because of the holiday. But
look at Sam. He's letting loose the subpoenas. Don't you love that? It's like an act of war, isn't it? I'm letting loose.
Peter, this is the greatest. I took this case per se. I'm the only one crazy enough to represent myself because it's a cut and dry case.
Cut and dry. Slam dunk. Game over.
I know. Only a fool represents himself in court. Is that what you're going to say to me?
Hey, Sam, I do it all the time, so I can't be throwing any rocks at your house.
Well, you know, I just noticed that when this reporter, who was a real big help, and you know, a good reporter scares the shit out of government or bad businessmen or bad people if he or she is asking, do you guys agree with that? They don't want to cover.
Yeah, it scares people. Sure.
A good reporter and a good media, when they do their job right, they scare the bad guys. And that's what he's done. And he's been able to dig up some stuff. And it'll be a front page story tomorrow. I'm really excited. But anyway, what he found out, and the more he dug, the more that incompetency, you know, stupidity, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. I mean, it's all those things wrapped up into one. But no one can tell him why they ripped down the property because they didn't take it to a court of law. It wasn't a dilapidated fire burnt out dwelling that was about to collapse. They didn't. The fire marshal was never called in, as is the law, to state what type of shape the structure is in. It just to a court of law for a judge to finally say this place has to come down for either administrative reason or legal. There's no rhyme or reason why they did it, other than the fact is they wanted to. And the reason they wanted to is just what I want to go to. They've created an industry out of this. There's demolition people. Now, the demo, and there's asbestos sky removal involved and all this sort of stuff, they charged the taxpayers $10,000 to take my structure down. Now, again, it comes from the reporter. I have not seen the actual invoicing. He's the one who dug up who did the demolition. I had a quote from a private contractor who's on the city's approved demolition list. If I decide once I got clear title to the property, he would have taken it down for $1,500. Now, I think that's part of the problem here, guys. You know, I'm a conspiracy theorist. You guys know that. I'm a little crazy and all that. I think you've got a lot of money and floating through hands here, free money. It was grant money. And that's why the more houses they rip down, the more money can flow through this industry that's come up to it. That's one of my takes on it.
Sam, you're just a little cynical.
Yeah. I mean, remember, there's a whole, they've created a whole industry, a whole other government industry out of this. And I did find out through a good friend of mine who's a county, who knows someone who's in the county attorney general's office, county prosecutor, excuse me, who's at war with this land bank because he himself, the prosecutor, said, if you keep taking down properties without notifying the lien holders, without a court record, I suppose he likened it to, you have to rip someone's house down if it's not in the nuisance, if it's not a fire trap, if it's not a safety hazard, which is an easy remedy. you have to go to a court action to take these properties from people because there's liens involved. You guys aren't doing that. You're not doing that. You're just ripping the fucking structures down, hoping the lien holders don't do anything.
Okay.
And that's when I, you know.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's move on to a different topic. New Jersey. Chris Christie seems to be having just a bit of a rough time. Bridgegate, Adgate, and now Sandiegate. Bill, what is going on in New Jersey?
Well, are you referring to the $4.5 million worth of ads promoting tourism in New Jersey?
Possibly.
but the weird thing is about half of the commercial has pictures of Chris Christie and a little bit of some beachfront and some other things in the background. So, you know, it's a real toss-up on whether he's... Yeah, well, that's right.
But, how can you see anything out beyond Chris Christie?
Wide-angle lenses. I just don't. I don't understand. I mean, you know, the question is, where did the $4.5 million come from? Did it come from? From Sandy Relief that's never making it to people, or did it come out of the government, the state government? The question remains whether or not he's promoting himself for a presidential candidate or whether he's really promoting New Jersey. Now, you know, there's a lot of tourism for New Jersey. New Jersey has incredible beaches, and they have lots of you have Atlantic City, you have close by designer outlet stores and malls and, you know, that cater to those needs. But, you know, the question becomes, you know, what's he promoting? Is he promoting New Jersey or is he promoting himself? And where's the money coming from that's promoting it? So that's in question now.
All right. Christie is the darling of the more moderate right-wing movement. Where does this leave him? You know, is he screwed? Bill?
You know, it's anybody's guess at this. I mean, he never liked the teachers. He's done all kinds of destructive actions against the teachers and their benefits, and even challenged tenure as an issue for long outstanding teachers. It's hard to know. I think the scary thing is that with all the things that he seems to be doing wrong, somehow they'll figure a way to just, put a Band-Aid on the cancer and just say, oh, he's still a good, viable candidate for president. But there's all kinds of new things that are showing up in the state of New Jersey as far as, where is his allegiance with? You know, is it really with the state of New Jersey? Like, for instance, they just came out and said that the state of New Jersey is now looked upon as being the least financially solvent state in the nation with Chris Christie at the helm. So do we want to take him from and put him to manage more of the federal money, which is already has a problem? Maybe you didn't notice. He didn't do anything to help the state of New Jersey. You know, he did some good things along the way, but ultimately they're going to downgrade all of our borrowing ability. They're going to downrate the bonds and everything else.
Sam, you're a political animal, and I know
when
that
I'm not playing lawyer.
Right.
Sam's an animal in his own right, period.
Right. I know that you tend to lean to the right, you know, albeit in a slightly different way from most.
I am a libertarian. So in some issues, I am to the right of others, and in some issues, I'm to the left of others. So that's what makes me great being a libertarian. As a libertarian, I can't tell you how much fun I'm having watching.
All right. Right. What is your take on Christie and the, you know, various gates that he has
found? Well, I tell you, the
one
that stands out in my mind is, now Bill knows better because he lives in the state, is that Christie has mismanaged the finances of Jersey. Forget about everything else. He's toast. Big toast. Every time I talk about Christie, we have to throw in food, right? Unintended. He's toast. Okay. He doesn't know what the truth is. He ate it. Ha, 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 ha. Okay. Anyway, if all those finances are truthful, forget about them. Forget about Bridgegate and Adgate and Shirley and all that, you know, and all that stuff, because that people are going to be looking for someone who's going to financially lead the United States to be better than Obama has. And obviously someone who screwed up the state, we're not going to give that guy a promotion, although, of course, in American government, stranger things have happened. But it looks like Christie is a I've always thought he's a megalomaniac. It's always about Chris Christie. As a matter of fact, if you remember, he had a flirtation with being drafted into the Republican primary a couple of years ago. And backed out of it, and he loved the limelight, loved it. But it really messed with Romney for a while, for about a month. Everyone forgets about that. That's why I was shocked Romney came to his aid over the weekend. And then I realized, aha, Christie is the establishment Republican Party's guy. The same people who gave you John McCain and Mitt Romney want to give you Chris Christie. In other words, they want to get their brains beat in the general election in the next presidential election. And they want to have to stand up and talk to them because Chris Christie supports NSA. Chris Christie supports going to war in Syria. Chris Christie supports giving us more and more money. He's the same. He's just like Obama. He's no different except he weighs 500 more pounds than he does. He also wants to be in the record books as he was the fattest president since William Howard Taft. And, you know, have a bathtub made for himself and all that. Look, I don't know. I hate to make fun. It's obviously, guy wants to take care of, you know, you're running for president of the United States. You know, take care of yourself a little. You know what I mean? You know, don't out there and, you know, looking like that, looking like you eat a McDonald's every 5 seconds. He's a real hero for the people who are trying to get their obesity under control and clean up themselves. I mean, he's the real poster child for Obamacare. So look what happens if you take care of yourself like him. You turn into a crook. You demand kickbacks from people. I mean, he looks like right now with the kick. And, of course, of all cities, Hoboken. I mean, this guy's the Tony Soprano as governor. Kickbacks, and you throw in the Rockefeller. Bill, is that the developer involved? Rockefeller Group?
I think that's right.
That family doesn't know how to grease palms and how to buy off people. I mean, you've got it. I mean, this is a new HBO special. It's too bad that Gandalf Lafoni, who how they pronounce his name, is dead. He could have played Chris Christie. With his eyes closed, he could have played Chris Christie. But anyway, I think that's what he is. I think more and more is coming out. I was watching some show over this weekend where it said that they may even be impeaching him. Is that true, Bill? Is it the impeachment that's come up in Jersey?
I haven't heard that, but, you know, there's always been bumper stickers to impeach lots of people from all the presidents in the last 20 years. One of the things that you may be right about the poster child, but I always thought it was going to be for like Weight Watchers and gastric bypass.
He
announced that he was going to get an operation for gastric bypass. He announced that I think it was either October or November. So I kind of thought that was a political move to say, you know, look, I was a common man. I had some health problems and I overate and I was a glutton and everything else. But now I'm a change man. Look at me. I'm going to be you know, 165 pounds, and look how good I look, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought that that's what he was, you know, setting up for in the near future. Yeah, he likes he likes to have everyone looking at him.
Absolutely. And that's why he's so big. That's his excuse for eating so much. Simon, and I hate to interrupt you, but a guy like Chris Christie, if he's just the smartest guy in the room and he tells him, probably thinks that he is, and he wants to run for president and he has this machine and an image and this and that, you don't put hand-picked people for the positions that he did unless they're doing stuff that's okay with the boss. That's the way politics and corporate America works nowadays. So I'm not surprised these people were twisting people's arms, using waving the carrot and stick of money, of government money, in front of them in order to make their boss look better. Doesn't surprise me at all, and it couldn't have happened to a nice guy. Bye-bye, Chris, don't let the door. All right, you're done. You're not going to be president of the United States. And with what you've done by just cutting down the lines for people to have to wait in traffic, you don't deserve to be president of the United States.
All I was going to say was that that there was supposedly a planned fundraiser going to be held at a local Denny's. However, it had to be cancelled. Denny's couldn't find enough cooks.
Oh, man, the fat jokes just never get old.
And Peter, have you been following the Chris Christie trials and tribulations?
I have been loosely paying attention to them. And, of course, when things are happening on a local level in New Jersey, as you can imagine, being a Californian, it takes a great deal to ever capture my attention. And so it doesn't – I find this all to be a bit of a tempest in a teapot. But then again, I find most controversies to be tempests in teapots. People get so up in arms about many things, most of which, in my opinion, are fairly minor in nature. But it is important that we focus attention on them because it's part of the gadfly of the state process that Sam is so good at. It's part of keeping people honest. That's what happens. I don't view too much of this as that big hullabaloo. I mean, the thing with the bridge, I don't know. It sounds like some staffers got a little too big for their britches and acted like fools, and he immediately dealt with them the way you would expect somebody to deal with someone like that. But I didn't really view it as that big a deal. And, surprise, surprise, there's a politician who actually likes to see himself on television. I mean, that's rare. You don't see that very often. And, he's in the business of getting reelected, and it's never surprising to me when a politician operating a branch of government makes a decision that somehow benefits himself in a tangential publicity manner, because that's what they're all about. They're like actors and actresses. They can't wait to get in front of another TV camera any way they can. So I still think, yeah, that's funny. Is he going to be a viable candidate for president? Well, I really wonder who isn't a viable candidate for president anymore. I mean, it just seems to me anybody with a self-addressed stamped envelope and two cereal box tops can run for the presidency. So I do expect him to be a contender in the primaries, and yes, a heavyweight contender. And I actually kind of like the fact that he's heavy. It just makes him seem a little bit more real and charismatic. I don't know how much he does weigh. We ought to get somebody on that. Sam, you said he's 500 pounds heavier than Obama. That's a bit too much, I think. He's probably got about two bills on Obama, but I put him in the 300s, but I'm no expert. And my mom used to like to see people eat and be happy, and I think there's a part of me that thinks that somebody eating and being happy is a good thing. So we'll see. It'll all shake out. I just can't wait. It wouldn't be wonderful if it was Hillary versus Christie for the president of the United States. That would be like the most hated presidential elections ever, wouldn't it?
Right. Well, that's what the staff both want. Republican Republican establishment wants Chris Christie no matter what, and the Democrat establishment wants Hillary Clinton no matter what.
Well, if you say so, you have much better knowledge of these things than I do.
I think the establishment wants. I think other people. I personally don't think Hillary. I think she's got help. I think she wants to run, but I think her health. I think she's got two things going against her right now: the truth about Benghazi and her health issues, and Bill's health issues too. They got some problems, and I think I told you. I believe my prediction right now is the Democratic nominee for president is going to be Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, because the Democratic Party wants to nominate a woman very, very badly for president, and Hillary won't because of her health. I think that's a real – her health and age will hold back. And Rand Paul will be the Republican nominee for president in 2016 based upon his taking the lead over domestic spying and NSA.
Okay, Sam, you mentioned Benghazi, and I do want to go there. But before I do, do you think that Christie is toast for 2016? Because
absolutely.
You know, voters have a really short memory.
I agree with you, but I think I'm going to go with paint my hat on my good friend Bill Conrad. He lives in Jersey, poor guy. And he said the things that the magical things to me. Okay, yeah, I agree with you. And Peter, you're right. These little scandals pop up all the time. Simon, you're right. Voters have a short memory. The long-term memory will be if he's ran Jersey's science into the toilet. Go, and I'm going to believe Bill. He can't win. They will. His primary opponents will beat him from pillar to post, and it just won't sell him to his world. Because that's what he's going to sell himself as. Forget about Bridgegate, forget about Adgate, forget about Sandy Hookgate. I am the man who tells it like it is. You told us like it is. Look at what your job you did to minding the store in New Jersey, and we're going to promote you to the presidency. Not happening.
Bill,
that's the bigger issue.
Bill, do you think he's toast for 2016?
I'm hoping he is. I have my own personal opinions about him and how I feel like he has actually hurt New Jersey's economy. But you know, no one believed me until probably the last few weeks that he hasn't really been helping. And please understand too that we lose sight of that this bridge closing actually took place in September. It was September 6th through the 13th is when this whole thing took place, and it took a long time for this to come to light. Again, I have such a hard time believing that Chris Christie did not know what was going on because he's such a micromanager in politics. He wants to have his nose in every piece of business in the state of New Jersey just to know what's going on and to somehow take credit for any good program that might actually come through the state of New Jersey and be a gold star on his lapel. So, he deserves what he gets. You know, you build your own legacy, and he's doing a fine job.
Splendid. Okay, enough of New Jersey and the fact that, Christie can't buy off-the-peg clothing. Let's move on. Sam, you mentioned Benghazi. It's one of my absolute favorite subjects. The Senate Select Committee on Intelligence released a report. I'll give you my take on it. I saw nothing new. Although at face value it was scathing, but digging deeper, it was merely a rehash of all that had already been published. In many ways, it actually vindicated the book the Embassy House that Simon and Schuster pulled from the bookstores, you know, following the 60 Minutes broadcast. It also skillfully dodged a number of pertinent questions. Sam, what did you make of the report?
The Senate report. Right? You're talking about the Senate report, Simon?
Yep.
The one that they said it was, that it shouldn't have happened. Well, I'm surprised it didn't pick it. I'm surprised Chris Christie's bulk blocked it from the number one story. The media is focused on Chris Christie, those defending him and those attacking him, dominating the story over Benghazi, every time something comes up about the truth about Benghazi, or I shouldn't say the truth, another layer to the story that makes certain people look bad, and it's buried. And I think that there's a reason why, and I think that speaks volumes, is that the truth is what everyone said it was way back when, is that there was a cover-up by the president and the secretary of state to blame it on a video, to blame it on everybody but them own selves. That what I've learned on a local level happens at a state level, county level, and, of course, happens all the way up to the national level. And we should never be surprised that it's happened throughout history. To men, to women, to emperors, to kings, to elected officials, instead of admitting we screwed up, we effed up, we ignored the wrong things, they cover up. They can't admit that they never want to face up to the truth because they're afraid of the truth. I'm learning as a pro se, and I've learned that the truth is a real, you know, facts are real stubborn things, especially when they're truthful and they're on your side and they help your argument. And that's a good thing. And I think that's why our legal system is set up the way it was and still is today, that, you know, if you bring the truth up, you're going to win. You know, and in politics, they can't handle the truth. It's like that Jack Nicholson movie of a few good men. You can't handle the truth. The American people are not being told the truth about what happened in Benghazi because it makes certain people look bad, and they have to be accountable for that. And no one in the government, under the Bush administration, under the Obama administration, when they have effed up, they've never been held accountable. Instead, they get a book deal, they get a movie deal, they get a this deal, they get a higher position, and nothing happens to them. And that's the way our system works right now. I hope that it starts to correct itself in the future, because I want to believe in a bigger, better government, where people get a return on their investment, the tax dollars. And Benghazi was a royal screw-up from the beginning, and it's been a huge cover-up since then. And what I've learned as a history student and political science student, and I had some of the great professors who told me this, the cover-up was worse than the crime. And that's what happens in government. The cover-up is all in big business. And the cover-ups are always worse than the crime. And same thing if you're one of those guys and women who strays from your spouse, right? The cover-up, when you're caught, you start to cover up. And you always get caught in the cover-ups. And that's what happens. It's just human nature. In this case, it's Benghazi. And the cover-up continues to go. And eventually, when the truth comes out, that's why Hillary Clinton's going to really be bad for her to run in 2016.
I like that. Peter, did you plow through the Benghazi report?
No, I did not, but I'm grateful for you telling me that you didn't see anything new. Now I don't have to put that on my reading list. And it seems to me that every time we discuss Benghazi, we haven't really gone anywhere, and that it's always the same thing. It's there are facts and information, or perceived facts and information, that are being bandied about, but I don't know if anybody is any closer to quote unquote solving the mystery of Benghazi than we've ever been. And maybe it's because there's no mystery to solve. As far as the incident itself, if they believe it was preventable, well, in hindsight, everything's preventable, or most things are preventable. Maybe it's what Sam's talking about, which is the quote-unquote cover-up. But I don't know if Benghazi's ever going to go anywhere or lead to anything except rhetoric and discussion and food for thought and cocktail party conversations and maybe even one or two good HBO TV movies. I really don't know what to make of the whole thing. It just seems to me that nobody intentionally let Benghazi happen. And if it wasn't intentional, it's obviously, some degree of inability to prevent that. And in hindsight, everything seems preventable. So what are we left to conclude? Where are we left to go? What can we do with any of it? I just feel like it will never go anywhere, in my opinion.
And Sam, Peter makes good points.
Absolutely.
However,
go ahead.
I read the report, and I found it curious. Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats, while they were scathing about little aspects, really didn't trash Hillary that much.
Because they don't know what she's going to do. I mean, also, I think, to me, it's not the politics of it. What I think is the cover-up all began with the video. And I know, Peter, that beating a dead horse, but it's just that people got killed. They probably shouldn't have been killed if we would have been more diligent with our... we have the source, the resources. We have the military. We have the much to do when we have to do things. This ambassador and these people knew that they knew they were in trouble. We knew that they were in trouble, that that's a hot spot. It was out there. Everything that was going on. And someone didn't give the orders to make these guys safer and probably other safer. And then when the shit hit the fan, they were all killed. They blamed a video. Okay, that's what my biggest problem is. That this guy, the commander in chief and the secretary of state lied, in my opinion, and didn't get up there and say, "Hey, we screwed up. We should have thought this coming. People are dead because of it. It's never going to happen again. We're not going to blame a video. We have to blame ourselves." I mean, but if you said Peter only cared about running for re-election, Hillary's only looking at 2016. Just as Chris Christie's going to lie, try to lie his way out of Bridgegate and everything else gate. Because all they care about is getting elected. Me, locally, what I'm dealing with, I can't believe some of the bullshit I've heard from the reporter told me these politicians said and whatnot. And then you realize what it's about, protecting their base, protecting their friends, and getting reelected. They can't look bad. So they will lie, cheat, and steal. My goal locally is to hold their feet to the fire, really hold their feet to the fire and make those feet pay me some money because my ox was good. At a national level, I can go on this radio show, I can blog, I'll go on Facebook more, Peter, if you say that's the place to go, and I don't doubt you, to try to tell people, hey, read, get involved, don't trust your government. It's not, after the NSA scandals and Edward Snowden, no one should. I mean, it's pretty sad that we're in that state of affairs, that we can't trust our government that we spend so much money to support. I do, what the three of you do, the listening audience does. We spend a shitload of money as families and individuals and small business people. We pay usury fees up the wazoo. We pay taxes. We do this to that to support this government. And what does the government do when it can? Lies, cheats, and steals and shits all over us. Gee, sounds like a great
business. But that's business as usual, Sam.
The what?
That's just business as usual.
It's got to change. Look what it's done. It's not going to change. It's been going on for 50, 60 years and a lot longer since then. But over the last 50, 60 years, it's become apparent to me that we have a system that is really broken down. It only rewards the super rich, the super corporations, big government, big everything, and that the little guys are, and little women are being stepped on, tromped on, and whatnot, and we're not getting a return on our investment. I mean, if you guys saw the shape of the roads in Ohio and the amount of money we pay in gas taxes and this and that, and they can't even effing plow the snow anymore like they used to. When I was a kid, they used to be able to, a 60-inch snowstorm, these guys were out getting, they cared about their job. They wanted to get the roads cleared. They wanted to lay salt down. Now with the high technology we have, we know when the storm's coming, the roads are worth taking care of terribly. Finally found out why. They finally exposed it because of the union. The guys who drive the plow trucks don't want to get. They don't want to be out at night. They don't get paid as much. They have to wait until a certain hour in the day. I think it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something. Then double time kicks in. So they don't plow during the day. They don't work till 3:30 or something. It's because of the union rule.
All right. It's still got lots to cover, but let's go to Bill. Do you have any thoughts on the Benghazi report?
There's still so much missing. You know, I think that in the next month or so, more things that are going to conflict some of the things they just released now. I'm just going to hold my... hold my thoughts at this point and see what else comes out in the next few weeks. Let's get on to something else.
All righty. Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to segue into Obama and the NSA. I listened to the great speech. It sounded like, everything's going to change, but... when you dig under the surface, everything's going to stay business as usual. You know, maybe we might outsource the holding of the phone metadata to a third party. I suspect that Target will be bidding on that contract.
Well, you know what... you know what, Simon? My understanding is that the same project managers that were involved with Obamacare are going to be involved with the NSA. So we know that it's going to be a quality product at the end of the day.
Perfect. I rather like that. And Sam, you must be chomping at the bit.
I thought, you know, look, I was expecting more from him, I'm talking about the president, to come out and say, look, this thing I'm a constitutional guy, I didn't realize how out of control it was, and he didn't. He did his usual Obama two-step. And, you know, and Wolf Blitzer had an orgasm, so did Tennessee Cooper. Because I watched the reporters after that. I could not believe the way they left this guy off the hook. He didn't say anything. I understand when he does the right thing and then he follows through with it. By all means, pat the guy on the back and sing his praise. But when he gets up there and just bullshit and doesn't offer anything, and this media fawns all over him still, it's mind-boggling to me. And, because he, you know... the fourth, like I said, hey, I'm a victim of it. I'm sure other Americans are. It bothers, you know, we have if we have the NSA, then I want the CIA dismantled. We don't need both. Why do we need both? We've got military intelligence. We've got the FBI. We've got the DEA. We've got all these other agencies. What do we need them for? The NSA. What do we really need them for? If we have the CIA, the CIA not doing its job, then off with the heads. You know, I mean, why not make changes? I get scared because our history is full of tyrants. The NSA potentially is going to give someone or some group that takes control an incredible leg up to have total information control over every American, and that's a scary thing. I think we have to look at it not could it happen, but yes, it will happen. That's the way history has evolved. And, you know, all rulers, even in a democracy, want to know everything about what the suspect, about what the people are doing. That's how they control. In our case, it would be control the vote and control the spin. you know, of how people think and get them to vote accordingly. And they can do that with this control of these websites, the social media, and all that sort of stuff. And it scares me. You know, this NSA is so good, George Orwell couldn't think of it. You know,
I have a fabulous idea on, you know, how the NSA could, number one, you know, actually generate some income, and number two, you know, generate some good publicity. They need to start a service, a bit like 411. You know, you could dial them up and say, who the hell was that telemarketer that just called me?
Oh, when you get the it's not a bad idea, Simon.
Well, you know, just out of curiosity, just so people know, you know, if you have a phone that shows you who's calling you, and, you know, I get a lot of phone calls, and I don't recognize numbers, and I don't answer. And then I look at the number. You can actually take a telephone number, and you can run a Google search on it. And you will be surprised the information that you come up with. People will say, you know, I've gotten several phone calls, and you Google them on the internet or run your internet search, and people say, don't answer this number. These guys are selling this service, that service, blah, blah, blah. You'd be amazed how you can search numbers and get tons of information.
That is true.
Yes. Except they use call blocking.
Well, some of them do, some of them don't. I don't know what to tell you. Don't answer anybody with call blocking.
Can
that's like rule number one.
I want to ask Peter something. Because I respect your legal, you know, the Constitution. You forget more about the Constitution than I'll ever know, and your lawyer and all that. Do you believe that the Fourth Amendment, that the search and seizure, the warrant, is an important part of our fabric of our society?
Yes, obviously it is. And the phrasing of the amendment, and I don't remember it precisely, is the right of the people, the government shall not infringe the right of the people to remain free from unreasonable searches and seizures.
Okay.
And
so
that's where the whole body of constitutional law over Fourth Amendment issues typically comes. It's trying to define what's reasonable and unreasonable.
Right. So I have a thing, so if we have a CIA, like I said, we have many, many law enforcement. We also had it at the local level, the county level, the state level, the federal level. We all saw that during the Boston manhunt. We have law enforcement, okay, up the wazoo, and we all pay for it, and we have the military. They know about a potential terrorist target A. If they think potential terrorist target A is a threat, they go to a judge and they get a warrant. I'm being simplistic, and then that judge looked at the evidence, signed the warrant, then the authorities grade that person, bring him into a court of law, charge him or her with something, and then we have a trial. Is that too simplistic, or is
The Fourth Amendment per se deals with the rights of the people, meaning the people of the United States of America, and the right of these people to be secure in their home with respect to their papers and effects, and the Fourth Amendment identifies this as an important right. Many of these amendments are extremely short, and the Fourth Amendment is not very long at all. It's a very simple amendment. It says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by an oath or affirmation, etc. So it's not that a Fourth Amendment deals with searching and seizing information for purposes of gathering together some type of criminal indictment, and what it's saying is that people aren't going to be subject, the government should not subject people to unreasonable searches and seizures, and that there should be a requirement for getting a warrant that establishes probable cause. And these are the predicates towards criminal indictments and criminal prosecutions. That's what the scope of the Fourth Amendment is advocating. But as a general rule, the concept is the same throughout government. The concept is the same throughout government. If you believe something is a criminal threat, a threat to life or well-being, typically speaking, you go apply for some type of warrant to either conduct further surveillance, gather more information, or something to that effect before you take the next step. But oftentimes in these situations, it's not reasonable or feasible to get warrants. The typical process, there's an exception to the general rule requiring this particular process to be gone through.
So would you, so by them spying on us or taking our text messages without our knowledge and storing them for a use that we don't know what for, do you consider that unreasonable?
Well, I think we have to define exactly what we're talking about here. Now, I personally don't believe that anybody is looking at my text messages, and I personally don't believe that anyone is looking at my emails either. My understanding of what this was is that they were issuing subpoenas to large-scale internet service providers, Yahoo, Google, MSN, whatever, I don't know. And they were that by operation of the federal laws, these service providers were obligated to provide information. Now, the subpoena issued to the service provider, but none of the consumers who are ultimately the target get any notice of this. And it's my understanding that they weren't just conducting whole-scale searches. They were searching based upon their perception that certain keywords or phrases have been triggered, and that would call attention to some people's emails. Now,
yeah,
in theory,
profiling through the emails and text messages. And you're 100% right. That's the smokescreen that they put up. But
okay.
It's come out recently that they were going through 20,000 text messages a day. Randomly, not some targeted people who they think was going to be a terrorist. Okay, you've been caught. You've been on the Al Qaeda website all the time. You're buying stuff and all that. Not people who are absolute morons that are hanging their asses out there about how they're contacting terrorists. Average citizens were having the text messages. They would look at people from the NSA.
You know, the whole thing reminds me of that Sprint commercial where you see James Earl Jones and who's that other famous English actor? They're staging a performance of two girls text messaging each other about how hot some other guy is. You ever seen that?
No.
Oh, that's a classic commercial. You guys got to Google that. These Sprint commercials.
Is it on YouTube?
It's spectacularly funny. These Sprint commercials where these James Earl Jones and this other famous English actor whose name escapes me for a second, they're pretending to – they give voice in theatrical drama to two people's text messages. It's hysterical. If they're going through text messages, they're going through text messages. I am under the belief they're going through text messages based upon the same general set of criteria. And if anybody saw my text messages, all I would think of is they'd be just listening to blithering nonsense. I don't consider my text messages to be that sacred.
But don't you want them, Peter? I understand that too, and the same goes.
Let's just be clear here. Technically speaking, if they are invading those, that's part of a person's papers or effects, in my opinion. So technically speaking, it comes within under the rubric of the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. And then the question becomes, is it an unreasonable search or seizure, and or is it a search that for which a warrant cannot issue, so it falls between the cracks? People might be surprised at some of the things they don't have privacy in. For instance, if you have a bunch of confidential papers or documents and you take them to your trash can and you put them in your trash can and put the lid on the trash can and seal the lid and then put it out there on your sidewalk for the garbage collector to collect, guess what? It's been held that you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that information because you have effectively now tossed it into the public domain. So the trash has become an acceptable means of people looking for private information without having to get a warrant or anything else. And that's when the rise of shredders took place in America, because people realized if they wanted to protect their privacy, they had to shred everything before throwing it away. And that's when credit card receipts stopped showing all the numbers. Now, this is potentially applicable, because then the question becomes, what type of expectations of privacy are there in things like email and text messages? And, you know, I think that what this is going to turn on is an underlying fact that there's very little expectation of privacy in those types of media, because ultimately those messages are being sent and received through some type of processor or what have you, and that generally speaking, the people who provide the service have access to that same information. Now, I just don't know how all these issues are going to shake out. That's where the issue with Fourth Amendment search and seizure is going to come from. How reasonable is the expectation of privacy with respect to some of these things? And I think probably most people will believe, and it will probably be concluded, that there that in certain circumstances there's a reasonable expectation of privacy, and in others there's not. And I just don't know where all those chips are going to fall.
You know, personally, everyone can, you know, read my email. It, for the most part, is pretty boring. You can check my text messages, but that wouldn't take very long, seeing as I don't even have a cell phone.
I know we're running out of time, but can I just interject one fact here?
Sure.
One of the things, when you have these telemarketers calling you, you notice that there's some awfully strange numbers. Sometimes they begin with three zeros. They can do anything else. I just want you to know that the technology exists and the rules exist that if I'm a company and I'm going to be responsible for my own caller ID information, it's called Annie Alley information, I can go to my carrier and say, I want to modify and make it so it's a more understandable caller ID information, and I'm going to control it from one of my devices on site. So if I wanted to, and I was unscrupulous, I could put my phone number as Peter Haven's home phone number with his name and his caller ID information. And then I'm going to do some illegal activity, and it's all going to appear as if it came from Peter Haven's home. That's the kind of problem with gathering all this information. Unless you get all kinds of other sophistication on there, it's going to look like it came from someplace other than where it really came from. So unless people are really smart in the government to interpret that information, they're not going to be able to track down that information and know that that's truly the source it came from. Just so you know, it can be done. You can spoof anybody's number. It can be done.
Oh, spoofing's been around for a long time. I mean, I'm sure that all of you have received emails from, quote, trusted sources, opened it up, and went, no, I don't think my buddy would actually be selling Viagra.
Right. So my concern is that the government is going to do the right thing with the information they gather. They can misinterpret it and interpret the wrong way, and suddenly you're in trouble to try to prove yourself against spoofed information. That's my concern about gathering all this stuff. Anyway.
Very valid concern.
Okay, I'm looking at the clock. We're down to the 1 minute mark. So I want to go around the table. I'm going to start with you, Peter. Any parting thoughts for us today?
Oh, no parting thoughts at all. It was a wonderful conversation. We covered the gambit, and we still didn't solve all the world's problems. Thank goodness we have till next week. Thank you all very much.
And Sam.
Once again, great time. I can't believe the time it went by so fast. Thank you for letting me be having three shoulders to cry on about my latest incident. I'll keep you all posted. I hopefully will win this case, get a few bucks out of it, and move forward with my life. And I want everyone to know Denver's kicking the shit out of New England. I think the second game will be better. I hope everybody has a great week. And one last thing, on a sad note, Dennis Rodman entered rehab today.
Yes, I noticed that. And Sam, a quick question for you. If you were in Virginia, would you drink the water?
Virginia, yes. West Virginia, no. Why do you think they have no teeth, as Peter Haven would point out? You know what, Peter Haven once sent me a joke. He said, Sam, you know who the fourth person in West Virginia is? I said, no, Peter, who is it? He goes, the Tooth Fairy.
Oh, Lord.
I don't remember saying
enjoy
that.
The chowder.
But it sounds good. I like it.
Enjoy the chowder, my friend.
Thank you.
And last word from Bill.
I just wish he'd move out from in front of the camera because we can't see what's going on behind him. Thank you for a great, great day of discussion.
Okay. We'll hopefully be back next Sunday. Same bat channel, same bat time. Till then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and healthy week. So till next time, goodbye.